Welcome to the weekend. I'm Angela Kocherga, and on this edition, a conversation with Ron Stallworth. He's a law enforcement veteran and the first black detective in the Colorado Springs Police Department. Stallworth worked undercover in four states. He's author of the best-selling book, Black Klansman, a memoir, which became the basis for the film written and directed by Spike Lee. My guest co-host for this interview is Alfredo Corchado, Mexico border correspondent for the Dallas Morning News, based here in El Paso. And this interview, because of social distancing during the pandemic, was done via Zoom.
What do you think that says to see the murder charges now in the second degree and the aiding and abetting?
From my vantage point, it never made any sense to just charge Chavin, the officer that put his knee on the neck of Floyd. It never made any sense just to charge him. The video clearly showed the one officer, initially they showed the one video where you saw the one officer standing there looking around. Later, a second video came out that showed the other two officers who were also sitting on Floyd's back. So that first video, when you saw the officer standing around, to me, that could have been, he could have been charged at that point too. When that second video came out showing the other two officers sitting on Floyd's back, that clearly was enough, in my opinion, to have charged them. So again, I ask, what took so long?
It's been, since the video appeared, I mean, it's just been astounding for people to try and understand this. But a lot of people were not, unfortunately, surprised because of the cases in the past. What are your thoughts when you saw that video of Mr. Floyd and those officers in that moment?
Especially as someone who's been in law enforcement for a long time.
I was surprised. I was shocked. I couldn't believe what I was watching. What especially was upsetting to me was looking at Chavin's face, Officer Chavin's face, and the apparent lack of compassion, lack of empathy on his face, had a very cold demeanor, as if he was gutting a wild animal, as if he had been out hunting and was gutting a wild animal. There was just no emotion whatsoever. While Floyd was lying there calling out, "I can't breathe," calling for his mama and everything else he was saying. It was very disgusting, to say the least. And that's what was galling for me in terms of the officer who was standing around. I can't think of his name. I believe he's a Hmong officer, Hmong or Laotian. He was just standing around looking at all this and whatnot and not saying anything to or doing anything, try to intervene and put a stop to it. He knew what was going on. He saw it. He was witnessing it. He's standing right there. He knew what was happening was wrong, and he could have put a stop to that and saved that man's life. But that's what was upsetting to me, was that this blue wall of silence was in effect at that point, and he was not willing to break it. He was not willing to break it, and he allowed that crime, that murder, that lynching to take place.
As someone in law enforcement, that insight that the general public does not have, it was horrifying for everyone to see. And as you said, in that blue line, that silence was on public display. But as someone in law enforcement, what are your thoughts? I mean, it's incredible to even observe this, but you have a much deeper understanding.
Yeah. You know, that's the problem with my old profession. We participate in incidents. We witness things like this, and we We're afraid to stand up and be counted when we see wrongdoing occurring right in our midst. And because we're afraid to stand up and challenge our fellow officers when they do wrong, we basically keep silent and back them up, support them. The blue wall of silence, we erect it. And in erecting it, we become participants in their wrongdoing, unwitting participants. We know it's wrong, but we don't want to stand and be counted. And that's what's wrong in our profession, always has been. When all you have to do is take that first step and say, stop it. What you're doing is wrong. It's against the law. You're hurting this man. You're killing this man. Stop it. And you have to stand up and be counted. Your voice has to matter. You have to be better than that. So this should have happened a long time ago. I'm glad these officers are being charged. I hope they are held accountable by the law. And I hope reform is done throughout the country. Federal reform takes place. I hope police departments stand up and do revisions internally. And I hope the profession becomes cleaned up and better as a result of all this.
Well, you talked about them standing by and not doing anything. There were bystanders who were speaking out and really begging to intervene and help. And now we see people in the streets and this this anger and outrage. These massive demonstrations, what are your thoughts? I was at one last night in El Paso and on Sunday night, and lots of young people, but people of all ages and all ethnicities and all races.
I love the fact that these protests are taking place. I don't like and I don't condone the violence that's taken place. Those are just a bunch of idiots trying to cash in on an opportunity. That makes no sense. What they're doing makes no sense. The protest itself, I'm happy for. One of the things I'm happy for is that they are making people stand up and take notice about the Black Lives Matter movement. This movement is one that is not anti-police. It's never been anti-police. It's one that is for making a difference. It's a modern civil rights movement led by young people. And it's always been about improving community relations between primarily the Black community, but also the community at large. So I think this is a turning point in the Black Lives Matter movement, the fact that this thing is literally gone global. And I'm happy for that. I applaud the fact that these protests, for the most part, have remained peaceful, nonviolent. I think it's disgusting what Trump did the other night. I couldn't believe what I saw on TV. And it's indicative of the fact that this country and the voting public experienced a major hiccup 4 years ago when they put him in office. And I think it's indicative of why we have to ensure that he's removed in hopefully 5 months. I think that's going to be one of the biggest outcomes of this whole affair, is that it has galvanized people, and especially that incident the other day in D.C., I think it has galvanized the public to the fact that they need to go vote, and there's been a lot of clamor about whether Biden is the right man for the job to replace him. I think Trump basically put a nail in his coffin and galvanize young people to go out and vote. There's only going to be one other person on that ballot. No third party candidate stands a chance of getting elected. And I think we have now seen the young public galvanized to the point where they probably will go out and vote for Biden and will ensure Donald Trump gets defeated. At least I'm certainly hoping that they recognize that.
Well, does this say, I mean, the about, especially in, we see in a place like El Paso, the relationship, the black-brown relationship with young people and seeing this common goal and the common impact of some of these police tactics?
In terms of the ethnic makeup of this peaceful protest movement, I think that's one of the better things that has happened. You're seeing black, you're seeing brown, you're seeing white, Asian, you name it. The color of the rainbow is a remarkable thing for this movement. I think that's great. I mean, the civil rights movement, you had, it was predominantly black, but you had your elements of white thrown in there. You had the white and the Jewish population that was involved in the civil rights movement in Dr. King's era. But what we're seeing right now is a new national movement that is taking over. And when you watch it on TV, it comes across very clearly. You see the white kids holding up signs saying Black Lives Matter. I'm white, but I understand your pain, that type of thing. And I think that's great. These kids are reaching out. They want to make a difference. They want to change America. They want to make it a better place. And we should all applaud that. We should all applaud that. And the fact that most of the people that have been the victims of police abuse of their constitutional authority, most of these victims have been black. But we can't forget that there's also Hispanic victims that have suffered. There's been a few white, but it's been predominantly black, and then Hispanic have been thrown in there. So we also have to keep that in mind. So this is a nationwide problem. It has to be addressed.
Ron, what is your message to the nation's two main minority groups, again, for this generation of Blacks and Latinos? I mean, what are the lessons from the past? How do you build coalitions today? How do you move forward? And I'm really interested, you know, coming from Ron Stallworth, the El Paso resident.
The lessons are we have to work together for the common good. My skin may be a little darker than yours and Angela's, but we have a common bond. We are human beings first. And as human beings, we need to work together for the common good, for the betterment of society and for the betterment of people in general, because that's what we are, people. So we need to stop feuding and working against one another and start working with one another. The Chicano movement, the Latino movement, Hispanic movement, whatever you want to call it, is in sync with the black movement. Always has been. Always has been. And when people raise their fists and say black power, it's no different than when you raise your fists and say brown power or Chicano power or whatever the current slogan of the day is. It's all united. It's all together. You just have to stop fighting and work for the common good. So I think they need to come together for that benefit and recognize that to those who try to separate and divide, they see one thing. They see you as a minority, period.
What role did David Duke, the KKK, play in trying to divide these two groups, the blacks and Chicanos or Latinos? Back in the 70s, back in the 80s.
The people like David Duke and the KKK, neo-Nazis, any of those racist groups, those very fine people as Donald Trump described them, Charlottesville, the people like that, all they see is you're not white. You're not white. That's the bottom line with these people. they don't like blacks first, then they wouldn't like Hispanics, but would all be based on the skin color.
One of the things we've heard in the last few nights in El Paso, it goes back to August the 3rd. Yes, this what we're seeing is civil unrest in the United States is about George Floyd. But for many El Pasoans, there's a parallel with that and what we saw August the 3rd. I'd like to get your thoughts on that.
Do you see them both as cases of racism, although one obviously official police officers in their role?
No doubt. No doubt. Racism is clearly at the heart of both incidents, except, Minneapolis involved a police officer, and El Paso's August 3rd did not.
Someone last night made the point that the suspect in the Walmart case, who killed now 23 people since someone else died, he was taken into custody peacefully. He was a young 21-year-old white man. He's in a jail cell. He'll have his day in court. And Mr. Floyd, over a alleged $20 fake bill, is dead. Didn't even get into the police car before he was killed.
Yeah. That's another part of the tragedy of the Floyd situation, is the fact that he died over a simple misdemeanor forgery case. You don't take somebody's life over a simple incident like that. It's unnecessary. It was uncalled for. The incident on August 3rd, if he had had a gun in his hand and the police came upon him, quite frankly, they should have shot him. Especially with the news that was going out about the incident at the Walmart that they had, they would have been fully justified in taking his life. To my understanding, he was disarmed at the time, or he was not armed at the time, and he held his hands up and surrendered. Unfortunately, and I say this with a grain of salt, unfortunately, you had good cops there that recognized he was not armed, and they did the right thing according to policy and law. They didn't take his life, even though we all probably wished they would have. Would have satisfied a lot of our bloodlust for revenge, and would have saved a lot of time in the judicial system, and we wouldn't be having a lot of this discussion right now. But he was not armed. So they did the right thing by not killing him. George Floyd didn't have a weapon, is my understanding. He didn't have a weapon. And even if he was resisting, you don't put somebody in a chokehold, a death hold, in order to bring him into compliance for a simple misdemeanor forgery case. You only put somebody in a death hold, a potential death hold, if it's a matter of life and death involving you or a third party. That is standard procedure taught at police academies all across this country. So what that police officer did, it was uncalled for. It was wrong.
Ron, again, drawing back to your experiences in El Paso, and you live in a multicultural community, largely Hispanic, but what are the lessons for the rest of the United States of coming from El Paso? It's a community that's by large, one of the most peaceful communities in the country, tolerant. What have you learned? What should other Americans throughout the country learn from El Paso?
The first thing they should learn is that if they want good Mexican food, come here. It's got the best. El Paso is a good community. It is a peaceful community. It's a very welcoming community. always has been. It is a type of community that will open its arms and embrace you. And it is a very warm community. I would encourage anybody around the country to come to El Paso, to visit El Paso, to consider making El Paso their home. It may not have an ocean with all its amenities. It may not have certain beautifying characteristics like a lot of other places, like San Diego and places like that, Phoenix. But we have our own certain type of beauty. There's a certain beauty in the desert. You have to experience El Paso to appreciate it and to love it. And I would encourage anybody out there to come visit El Paso. Experience what El Paso has to offer. You won't be disappointed. I think we have a good mix in terms of our racial breakdown. Just by the very fact that we live on the border, it's going to be dominated by the Mexican community and culture. That's a given. That's understood. But you learn to live with that breakdown. You learn to understand it, and you learn to adjust to the dominance of the Mexican culture here. It's a part of the character makeup of El Paso. One of the things I've always said, and I've never understood why, is the fact that with the dominance of the Mexican culture, why they don't dominate politically. You have this dominance, but yet you have a white dominance in terms of the overall political character of El Paso, and it's always been that way. To me, it's never made any sense. Why can't the dominant culture of El Paso get its political act together and rule? It's always been on my mind. Why can't they learn to consolidate their political power and maintain control of the city in which they dominate? I've never understood it. I mean, that's one of the things it's one of the things that intrigues me nationally, too, with the dominance of Mexican Americans in this society of ours. If they were to put that dominance to the voting booth, they could do a lot of good things. They could do a lot of good things. And we don't see it here in El Paso, where it could really show effect. We don't see it nationally. And I wish they could, I wish somebody could come together and literally build a movement where we could see that come into play. I really do.
What gives you hope right now as you look ahead, or what would you like to see that would give you hope as we look ahead?
What gives me hope right now is I'm hopeful in terms of what I'm seeing on TV with these peaceful protests, these kids. The activity that they're displaying, protesting the killing, protesting the government, the totalitarian nature of our government right now. Quite frankly, I'm loving the fact that in Washington, D.C. especially, they have forced Trump to back down from his threat to bring the military out and, quote unquote, dominate the streets. They're standing up to him. They're daring him to do that. And thus far, he has cowered and backed down. I love it. They're proving that he's more talk than action, which I think we all recognize that. And this is a young people-powered movement, and I think it's only going to get stronger as time goes on. So the fact that these young people are standing up and challenging the totalitarian nature of our current makeup of our government, I think is encouraging. If they keep this up and they follow this up with going to the ballot box in November and they make the right vote, and I say right not as a pun, but the right vote in terms of electing Joe Biden, then I think we will see some good positive change in the immediate future. This country has got to get back on track. And by that, I mean we got to get rid of Donald Trump. And quite frankly, we have to get rid of Mitch McConnell and every other Republican out there.
I mean, you talk about the sense of despair about not enough Hispanics taking their rightful role as a majority. Does this coalition, what you're seeing on the streets, does that give you a sense of hope that maybe that can change, that can lead to bigger change?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Whenever you get a mixture of the races, a rainbow coalition like what we're seeing right now, it always gives hope. But what needs to happen is you can't have this mixture come together for a moment like this, and 6 weeks from now, it all fades away after the music stops. It has to be an ongoing effort. You know, the Black Lives Matter movement, as I recall, the Black Lives Matter movement came into effect right around the time of Ferguson. And it's continuing. It has continued, rather. Quite frankly, it has continued because things keep happening, which keeps adding fuel to that fire and allows them to keep growing. Their message keeps expanding. And right now, I think we're seeing that their message has a worldwide appeal. When we see signs that says Black Lives Movement in Rio de Janeiro and London and places like that, now we're seeing a worldwide movement under Black Lives Matter. I think that's good. So we have to hope and pray that this thing does not die down, that these kids keep it going. But it has to keep going with a purpose. It has to keep going with a purpose.
Thank you, Ron. I can't wait to read your next book. Talk about adding pressure to you.
We know all authors.
Well, I'm sitting here working on it. I'm about 60 pages into it. So it's early, but it's being worked on.
We'll look forward to that. Can't wait to read it.
All right. Ron, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for sharing your insight and your time, Ron, during this important time. Appreciate it.
You're welcome, folks. You please take care and stay safe.
Oh, to Patsy.
Yeah, give Patsy our love.
I will. Thank you.
Enjoy that, man.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.